This is the catchy theme song. This is the catchy theme song.
One of the biggest complaints I hear from people who are both inside and outside the church about just living in America is community. Whenever I ask people the question, do you feel like you have good, solid, consistent community in your life? Their answer is usually no. Really, your only options are church or work. And for those who aren't religious, work is kind of it. Or you have to find some social group, or like you have to be really intentional, whatever it is. Community doesn't tend to develop naturally in American society. And even in the church context, I still talk to a lot of Christians who don't really find that they feel especially connected to their church. They don't feel like they really belong to a tightly knit community. And if you talk to church leaders, I'm sure they would point you to the community groups or small groups or discipleship groups or life groups, whatever you call them. I'm sure they would point to those as evidence for community within the church. And they would be right in a lot of cases. Like, that is kind of the avenue through which community happens within the context of a church. But I would actually argue that that's not even close to enough. In fact, I actually think that community groups are kind of cute. And I don't think this is a reflection on the church necessarily. Like, this is not primarily a complaint against the church. I think the church is doing the best it can. And I think that community groups are a good thing. And it's good that those exist within a church. And if you're a part of one, you probably know that it really can be a blessing. And I think it's good that the church has those things. And if you don't belong to one, I would encourage you to belong to one. It's a good thing. But the reason I call it cute is because I just think it's so funny that we have to schedule community. Like, I think the fact that we have to have community groups is itself a testament to what a sad culture we live in. And I think what I'm about to say comes as a surprise to exactly zero people. We live in a very isolated culture. With the exception of children and college students, I would argue that in high school, we actually do have pretty close community. Like, for a lot of people who are in high school, they do belong to communities. And then in college, you're thrust even deeper into community. For a lot of people who go to college, you now live with your community, whether that's a fraternity, a sorority, or a campus ministry, or the band, or a football team, whatever it is you belong to in college, a lot of people experience the most community of their life when they're in college. And then after college, you are thrown into the individualistic society that is America, and it is just the whiplash of being thrown into this world where suddenly you have no community, and finding community is borderline impossible. And I'm sure we can blame social media and things like that, but I think there are really two factors at play that I want to talk about. The first factor is just American culture. Like, I know I'm talking about the church and we're talking about Christianity, but it's really important to understand the culture in which we exist if we want to understand what's happening in the church. And I think what we need to do is look at American culture from a broader perspective and ask the question, how does this contribute to the lack of community within the church? Now, there are two primary types of culture. Well, there's a lot of different types of cultures, but there's two that I want to focus on. And those are individualistic cultures and communal cultures. Now, I've lived in Africa for extended periods of time, and we're actually moving there here in like a month and a half. So I've spent a lot of time in what would be considered a communal culture. In fact, some people would consider African countries to be the most communal cultures in the entire world. America is on the other extreme end of the spectrum. America is an individualistic culture. And I don't really have time to go into all the details of what that means, but basically an individualistic culture, people see themselves as individuals. They view their lives in terms of who they are, not what community they belong to. And in America, we tend to see our lives in terms of our accomplishments and our independence rather than a group that we belong to. In Africa, on the other hand, in a communal culture, they tend to see life in terms of relationships, and they tend to see people in terms of what group they belong to. And that's how they kind of understand and interpret life. It goes much deeper than that, and I could talk about this literally forever. Like, culture is one of my favorite topics to talk about, but I just want to bring that up to demonstrate how that affects community within the church. So in Africa, life is all about relationships. At the end of the day, their biggest question is not the same question that we ask. At the end of the day, in America, we ask the question, what did I accomplish today? Did I finish all my tasks? Did I check off my to-do list? Did I answer all my emails? Did I work hard? A lot of times we tend to view life in terms of what we do. In Africa, it's not really like that. At the end of the day, a lot of Africans, and I'm saying Africans, really what I mean are West Africans, because that's what I know. Africa is an enormous continent, and I don't claim to know every single culture in every single country. So I'm actually really referring to West Africa, more specifically Liberia. But I've also spent time in Kenya, and it seems to be like this as well. I would actually argue that Kenya is more communal than Liberia is, but that's a different conversation. Now, for a lot of Africans, at the end of the day, what they ask themselves is, did I have meaningful interactions with people today? How did I expand the relationships that I already have? Did I see a lot of my friends and family? Am I still in good standing within my community? That is how they see and understand life. It's totally different than how we see and understand life. So in Africa, if you go to the market and you see someone you know, you stop and you have a conversation with them, realizing that that is a really high priority. Now, in America, if you go to Walmart or Target or something like that, and you run into someone you know, the conversation you have with that person probably won't take longer than like 30 seconds to a minute. And if it goes over that, you'll start to get kind of uncomfortable. And if you're not uncomfortable, you're probably making the other person uncomfortable. Like, you're probably the person who they're like, oh no, not that guy. And they like go down a different aisle because they don't want to get stuck talking to you. And the reason for that is, in America, we place high priority on what we do. So when we go to the grocery store, we're thinking primarily about the task we have to accomplish, get groceries. And then we're also thinking about the things that we have left to do during that day. If we're out running errands, or if we have to be at soccer practice, or if we have to be at school or something like that, we're thinking about what we have to do. So running into someone we know is actually kind of an inconvenience. Whereas in Africa, running into someone you know, that makes their day. And what's considered extremely rude in a more communal culture like Africa is to see someone you know and then quickly say, hey, and then move on and tell them that you're busy and you have to be somewhere, because that communicates to them that their relationship is not really a high priority for you. And if we're honest, in America, I think that's kind of how we think, that the relationship really isn't a high priority for us. Like, we really are thinking about what we have to do. But for us, it's not rude. That's how we live. That's our life. It's very fast-paced. It's very intense. And we focus on the things that we have to do, the tasks that we have to accomplish, rather than the relationships that are present within our lives. Like, in Africa, you can kind of go over to someone's house whenever you want to. And when you show up, it's expected that they'll drop what they're doing and entertain you and feed you. And that's normal. Like, in Africa, I can be working on a project, and if someone drops in to say hey to me, I'm expected to drop what I'm doing and usually give them some food. Like, if I have food, I should give them some, or send someone to get food or something like that. And then the interaction that we have can take up to like 2 or 3 hours. And that's just kind of how life is over there. Relationships are the very fabric of existence. And if I told them that I was busy and they needed to come back later, then that could be really insulting. Like, they're understanding people, and maybe I am doing something really important. But for the most part, if I don't drop what I'm doing and say hey to them and prioritize them, then they'll be pretty offended. Now, in America, it would be considered rude to invite yourself over because people are busy and they have things that they're doing. And what you really find when you enter into these relationships are inconvenient. Like, that's the same in America and Africa. The difference is not the inconvenience that relationships bring to life and the drama that relationships bring. The difference is the amount of priority that is placed on relationships. In America, we value so much what we're doing that we don't really have time for relationships. Whereas in Africa, they value relationships so much that a lot of times they don't have time for what they need to do. So what's the solution? As I mentioned, I'm talking more about American culture than I am the church. And so if the church is affected by American culture, what's the solution? Change the culture? I had someone ask me recently, like, what do we do then? Because I was having this conversation with someone and they said, well, what's the solution then? How do we encourage our church members to live into community? And my response was a little bit sarcastic. Like, it was more of a joke, but I said, tell everyone in the church to sell all they possess, give to the poor, and then live in close knit community and depend on each other. Like, if I was the pastor of a church and I told my church to do that, I don't think they would really take me seriously. Like, that's a really extreme solution to offer for the problem, but that's the only thing I can think of. Like, I can't really think of a good solution to that problem. And the reason why I offer that as a solution is connected to the second factor that I believe is at play here. And the second reason that I believe community is so difficult to find within a church is the culture of money that exists within a church. In the previous episode, I talked about how I believe that a lot of churches in America have come to be dominated by a culture of money, and that in turn turns churches into businesses. And I think that affects communities in drastic ways. See, this kind of goes hand in hand with my first point, because the culture of America, being an individualistic culture, places high value on what we do, and what we do tends to generate money. And so in American churches, we have a lot of task-oriented, individualistic, hard workers who make a lot of money, but don't have much time for relationships. And what I found to be mostly true, like this isn't a universal truth, but what I found to be like generally true is that the richer a person is, the less community they have. And it kind of makes sense. Like the more money you have, the more you can isolate yourself and the more you can provide for yourself, the less you need other people and probably the busier you'll be. And I think it's hard for rich people to live in true community because with money, people tend to isolate themselves. Now, like I said, this isn't always true. I actually am thinking about people I know right now who are pretty rich, but also have very great community. I think it's just for a lot of rich people, it's not so much a priority. And in one of the previous episodes, I talked about the idea of thorny Christians being in church, Christians who are choked out by the cares and the deceitfulness of riches in this world, yet continue going to church because the church, being a business and being run by other thorny Christians, affirms their affluent lifestyle. And so they continue going to church and belonging to community groups and serving in leadership positions and things like that. And when that happens, basically what you have is people who aren't Christians belonging to Christian community, and that in turn dilutes the strength of Christian communities. The more non-Christians you have in Christian community, the less serious that Christian community will be. Because what brings people into Christian community ultimately is a common passion for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And if you have people in church who aren't actually passionate about the gospel and who don't really see their lives in terms of ministry, then what unites people at that point? At that point, what brings people together is more just like what church you choose to go to, which football team you like, which Netflix shows you like, what their political views are, how old your kids are, what stage of life you're in, your socioeconomic status. And see, the lifestyle of the rich is just not conducive to community. Like, it's really hard to do. I said a moment ago that I do know rich people who have great community, but it's more difficult. There's something about the lifestyle of the poor that just kind of forces you into community. And I know Africa is a pretty extreme example, but where we live in Liberia, a lot of people don't have cars, so they walk everywhere. Their houses are so small and hot during the day that they sit outside and they talk and they take care of each other's kids. And when they need money, they go and ask their friends or their family or their neighbors for money and they help each other out. That's what communal looks like. And I guess for me, going between the two extremes of America and Africa, I see the stark contrast. And so when I see churches gathering together in community groups, I just kind of laugh because I'm like, I don't think you know what community looks like. And I guess I've been immersed in one of the most extreme versions of community. So for me, it's easy to look at that and be critical. But I think I do offer a unique perspective. And for that reason, I think I'm going to do more episodes on this. Like, I think this is more of just an introduction because there's a lot to talk about here. And I actually do plan on bringing some Liberians onto the show. Once we're living in Liberia, I'm going to keep doing this. And I actually want to interview some Liberians and give them the microphone and let them talk. Because in a lot of cases, what they have to say is far more interesting than what I have to say. And I want them to tell you this with their own mouth. But what I have found is that the lifestyle of the poor just kind of forces you into community. It forces you to rely on each other and it forces you to be in each other's presence. And like I said, it's inconvenient and it's uncomfortable, but that's their way of life. So again, what's the solution? Do we just force ourselves to become poor? I don't think that's really the solution. And to be honest, I don't think there really is like a neatly packaged solution. And finding community in America is really difficult. I can point out the problem and I can kind of uncover where the problem comes from, but offering a solution is really difficult. And I think this is a conversation that we just need to keep having. Okay, so I'm actually editing this video now. And so this is Corey in the future. I've had a couple thoughts since I've made this video, and I realized that I kind of thought of at least a small solution, at least one solution to the community problem that I'm talking about in this video. I realize that if you want to have good community, one of the practical ways to do that is engage in ministry together, like get together and then enter in the trenches of ministry. I think that will bond you in a way that just sitting in a Sunday service or like gathering together for community group really can't. Like if you think about your relationships, think about the relationships that are kept to strictly talking, like meeting for coffee or meeting for lunch or something like that. And then think about the relationships you have where you've actually like done things together. And I think those are really two types of relationships, or at least they have like different dimensions, different levels to the relationship. Like I believe you can only get so close to someone getting coffee with them. Like you could get coffee every single day, but if you're not doing something together, I believe you won't ever truly get to know each other in kind of like a full sense. And so I believe that at least one of the solutions to developing closer community in America is gathering together as the church and then doing ministry. Like, look at people who come back from mission trips. Usually they're really close and they have deep relationships that they've developed from spending time in another culture, doing hard things, going through hard things, and going through fun and good things. I believe that happens when you're doing ministry, is you just develop closer relationships. And I think we should be doing ministry anyways. So I think this is a practical way to get out there and develop deeper community. Okay, that's really all I want to say for right now. I'll talk about that more later, I'm sure. But hopefully this will tie back into the video smoothly. Like, I don't know how this is going to transition, but we'll see what happens. But one thing I have noticed is that in areas of persecution and throughout Christian history, whenever persecution arises, Christian community tends to grow stronger. And that makes sense because, I mean, given the two reasons that I gave for why community does not exist in the church, those reasons kind of go away whenever persecution arises. And in America, it's not hard for the wealthy to be in church because it can actually offer some advantages. Like, it can give you some connections, it can provide some relationships, and a lot of people find their significant others in church. But when persecution arises, what tends to happen is a lot of the wealthy will leave the church because now they have something to lose. Now it actually costs them something to be in church. So a lot of these thorny Christians no longer belong to church because now it's difficult. Persecution tends to expose who's serious about their faith and who's not. So it concentrates Christian community with a heavier concentration of real believers. And that tends to generate a stronger Christian communal culture where Christians are collectively relying on each other and depending on each other, praying for each other and supporting each other. And a lot of these other sort of superficial commonalities that they share, like their favorite TV show or their favorite football game, just kind of gets eclipsed by the pressing need to advance the gospel in a place that is heavily persecuting them. And I mean, just imagine getting together for small group and praying together, knowing that there's a pretty good chance that the next time you guys meet, one of the members of that small group could be arrested or potentially killed for what they believe. Like, just imagine for a moment if when you got together for small group, you were praying for each other that God would give all of you strength to endure trials ahead, to endure persecution, torture, or execution for the name of Christ. Like, that will bond you closer together. Like, you're just going to develop deep relationships when you're going through that together. Just look at soldiers who went through war together. Like, they have a relationship that a lot of people will never understand. Going through something hard together bonds you in a way that meeting once a week and eating together doesn't. Like, I'm not saying community groups can't lead to lasting community. I'm just saying it's really hard if you're not going through anything together. And it's especially hard if a lot of the people who are there don't even care about the same thing that you care about as a Christian. And so I do think persecution tends to sort of purify the church in a way, but that raises a really important question. Is persecution good for the church? I don't know the answer to that, and that's a really hard question. So I'm going to save that question for another episode. Bow out and just kind of backhand the mic and walk away. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support what I'm doing, just reach out and let me know you're listening. That's it. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. I know that sounds cliche and kind of petty, but that actually does make a difference and it helps me get these videos out to more people. If you're listening on a podcast streaming service, just leave me a review and share this. And that'll help me get these episodes in front of a larger audience. If you'd like to support the work that we're doing in Liberia, just visit standingsidebyside.org. If you'd like to make a donation, you can just go to the donate tab on that page, or you can just Venmo at Standing Side by Side. Thank you so much for listening. Keep the faith.